about it. In your lives, who did you really like? More often than not, it was people who were accepting of you, people who liked you. And whenever you want to build a relationship, you have to think about, who did you build a relationship with? It was the people who were accepting of you, loving of you. Okay, it could be it was your parents. You were born into that relationship. And they didn't love you the way you would like to be loved. And they didn't accept you the way you would want to be accepted. And we have nothing to do about that. That's not our choice. I'm talking about other than our relationships that we were born into. The relationships that we formed. Sometimes you meet someone and right away there's a click. Part of that click is that you feel like there's a connection. This person is accepting of who I am. And people that are accepting usually have many friends. In life, it'll do you well to be accepting of people. But I'm not working on life now. Our class is about marriage. And more often than not, the reason that people are dissatisfied with marriage is because they are not accepting. I didn't say the other side isn't accepting. I said because they are not accepting, guys. Totally different point. Wait. How many people are capable of loving? You'd be surprised. Most people are not. Well, they're capable, but they don't. People are in a relationship, but they don't really open themselves up. I'm talking about married people. I'm not talking about single people. So, we're still using it. Yeah, thank you. You made the class tonight. Thanks for the CD. We discussed last week that the thing that bonds within a relationship, within marriage, are true compliments, true appreciation. And we discussed that the thing that distances people in a marriage is criticism. The more accurate, the more true, the more it hurts. We discussed that within marriage, we want our spouse to love us where we don't love ourselves, where we know we are weak. Well, that's what our spouse wants of us as well. Now, in order to be able to give that, we have to first be on solid footing ourselves. Meaning, a person that doesn't like himself will not be capable of liking others. A person that is not at peace with himself will not be able to build a relationship with it, which is at peace with others. You could have the greatest wife in the world. It does not matter. If you are not at peace with yourself, you will not be at peace with your spouse. You cannot be at peace with anyone. It stems here, but you'll see it everywhere else. So when we discussed a few minutes ago, seeing the good within ourselves, that is key to being able to bond, to seeing the good in others. People try to give their kids everything. They give them a car, they give them a house, they give them money, they give them games, they give them a credit card. And the kid goes off and overdoses on drugs. Then you have people who beat their kids and do everything terrible to their kids, and the kids walk out and they're successful adults. What is the key to leading a happy life? The key is not in how much material wealth you have. Chazal told us, Ezu Ashir, who is wealthy? Hasameach bechelko, someone who's happy in his lot. You know, there was once a person, true story, I'll tell you who it was in a few minutes. He lived about 2.5 millennium ago. And he was within the empire that ruled the world at the time. This empire ruled the world. It was one of the few empires in world history that had full control over the world. He was second in line under the king. And the king was a drunkard. The king didn't know what he was doing. So the king gave him really full control over the empire. So even though he wasn't the king, but he had everything but being the king, because he was the top advisor. He had everything he wanted. And there was one guy he didn't like. But the guy was pretty important politically. So this guy got the king to wipe out all of this guy's neighborhood, all of the people this guy was close to, so that the king wouldn't realize he was really wiping out this guy too. He had everything. He had wives, he had children, he had over 100 children. He had everything you could imagine in the world. And he even had a decree set out when he would wipe out this guy, when he would come with his men and personally kill him. And everything, he had everything he could want in the world. But one point, that this guy wasn't yet dead. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Haman. Haman was second in command in Ahasuerus's monarchy. Ahasuerus, the Persian Empire, Chazal have on tradition, the empire ruled the world. Ahasuerus was a drunk, spending his life at feasts. He gave his ring to Haman. Haman controlled the world. Haman had the power to do anything. He had one man he didn't like, Mordechai. He had a decree out to have Mordechai dead. It was only a matter of time till Mordechai would be dead. He's on his way back from the feast. The queen, when she's having a date with her husband, invites Haman. Imagine that. Honey, let's have some intimate time together. Just don't forget to call Haman. Haman's there and on the banquet that Esther sets up for the king. Haman walks out feeling like he's on cloud number 9. And he sees Mordechai sitting at the king's gates. And Mordechai won't bow to him. So Haman comes home, calls in his wife, top wife, calls in his children, 100 children, calls in all his friends and advisors. They're all subservient to Haman. And he starts telling them, you know how much wealth I have? Well, let's put it this way. Chazal say there was one wealthy Jew and one wealthy non-Jew. The wealthy Jew was Korach. He had, 1,000 camels carrying just the keys to the storage houses of his wealth. And Haman was the corresponding non-Jew who was wealthy. So you can imagine how much wealth he had. I don't know. Korach in the Torah. Yeah. So Haman is the wealthiest man probably in world history. Most powerful man on the planet. He has everything. And he comes and calls them all in and says, V'chol zeh, everything you guys see, einenu shoveh li, it's worthless by me. Everything you see, he's got all the wealth, it's all worthless. V'chol eit, asher ani roed Mordechai ha-Yudi, yoshev b'shar ha-Melech. When I see Mordechai, the Jew, sitting there, it's all gone. Everything I have is worthless. Now ask yourself, he has everything in the world, including a decree that Mordechai should be killed within a year. Everything's there. But right now, there's this Jew who will not bow to him. Right now. And that's his focus. Shows us where a person could reach. You know, he could have everything. He could have all the power. He could have all the money, all the wives, all the kids, everything you can imagine. And even his enemies are on the verge of being killed. But right now, this moment, there's a Jew who won't bow to me. Everything I have is worthless in my eyes. Why? That's life. Our happiness or lack thereof is not contingent on what we have. It is contingent on our state of mind. Haman could have everything and say it's all worthless. A person could have close to nothing and be the happiest person around. Who was the poorest Jew when we left Mitzrayim? Moshe. Moshe had the greatest prophecy. He must have been pretty happy. You can't have prophecy without being happy. Most modest, happiest. He wasn't lacking anything. It's a question of perspective. He could look around and say, everyone's got more than me. Everyone had more than Moshe. But that didn't bother him. The greatest gift we can give our children is an appreciation for what they have. I once was a guest by a family where the mother grew up as an orphan. And I remember her telling her kids, there's nothing more beautiful that God gave us than a warm shower. And I remember walking away from that Shabbos with a totally different appreciation for a warm shower. You know, I grew up with it. It was a given. She said to her kids, you know, I had years in my life, I could never have a warm shower. It is the most pleasant, beautiful thing that God gave us. So I don't know if I'd agree with her description, but I can tell you that to this day, and it's been a few decades now, every time I take a warm shower, I think of her sentence, their kids. You could have something very simple to us, something we can have every day and not appreciate it. Now, the same goes for who we are. We ourselves. We have a lot of good about who we are. And yet, no one here had such an easy time writing good points about themselves. So maybe we have to spend a little bit more time doing that, recognizing where we are, coming to peace with ourselves. When a person comes to terms with himself and is at peace with himself, that is when a person can start really growing. I'm not talking about the type of peace where a person says, I'm great, I'm perfect, I got nothing to work on, you know, I'm just going to spend the rest of the day like this. That's not what I'm talking about, guys. And you know that. You know that. We're not talking about a person entering laziness and stopping to work. We're talking about working from a different point. Working out of strength, not out of weakness. Working out of happiness, not out of sadness. Working, looking into the future to where I can get to, not looking at the past, to what I haven't done. So step one is being able to do that with ourselves. Step two is being able to see the good in others. Why is the dog considered man's friend? Even in the Gemara says, the Gemara discusses what is a shegal. One opinion in the Gemara is that a shegal is a dog. So then the Gemara says, why is the Torah described as a shegal? Nitzvah shegali mincha. You'll have a dog to your right side. That's the blessing it promises in Tehillim. So the Gemara says, in the wages that the Jews are fond of the Torah, like the non-Jews are fond of dogs, and those wages you'll get, etc. So you see that dogs, it's a given in the Gemara that people are fond of dogs. Why? Dogs. What's unique about a dog? Different than any other animal. What's unique?
Loyal.
Not only loyal.
He gives love.
He doesn't judge.
Oh. You leave for 2 minutes. When you come back, he's so happy to see you. He's your biggest fan. Much better than a cat. A cat wants your love. You got to give a cat. Purr it and pet it and feed it. You invest in a cat. A dog loves you. He's all about you. He's jumping all over you. You come back home, you're $1 million. You're his MVP. Doesn't matter who else exists. Oh, right. People are always looking for lost cats. Right? The cat is focused on itself. The dog is focused on you. Dog is, he also wants to eat, he also wants to be pet, he also, all that's true, but he knows how to give. So why do people like dogs? Because of the welcome, because of the response. I don't need you to like dogs, but I need us to learn the message. If we want to be liked, it's a question of, are we happy to see others? It's a question of, can I see the good in others to be happy with them? We discussed the first half of the class, seeing the good in ourselves, being at peace with ourselves, which is step one. Before that, I can't be at peace with the best wife in the world. First, I have to be at peace with myself. See the good in myself. Being at peace doesn't mean I'm perfect. I'm not. No one's perfect. But being at peace means recognizing the good. Not only seeing the bad, not only seeing what has to be fixed, seeing what's good. Now that I'm at peace, I could be tranquil, and grow from there, now I could also be at peace with others and happy with others. The next step is to see the good points in others. Shlomo HaMelech said, Mikol milamdai iskalti. Everyone has points we could learn from. And everyone has good points. The question is, do we see it? And if we don't, the fault is not in them, the fault is in us. We have to have a good eye. And you know what? That's the song. Nekuda tova, ve'od nekuda tova. One good point, and then another good point. When we could see those good points in others, even a person who started off wicked, ve'od me'at ve'in rasha, there is no more wicked. We have a choice in life. Will we criticize that which is negative, or will we strengthen that which is good? And I don't care what any person thinks his wife is. There's good. Are you going to strengthen it or not? We're approaching the holiday of Hanukkah. Hanukkah, we begin with one candle. And I have a friend, a relative, who always says on the 7th and 8th day of Hanukkah, the lights are so beautiful. Why didn't the sages say 8 nights, 8 candles? So beautiful when you hit the 8 candles. Why? Why does there have to be 1 mezi candle, 2 mezi candles, 8, 8, 8? That would be gorgeous. I think that's the point. You can start with one, like that flask of oil. One. You can start with one good point and grow a tzaddik. No one starts perfect. People enter marriage and think, well, you should have grown up by now. You know, this isn't 5 years old. I didn't have to bring you up. No, it's not true. We do bring one another up. In a good marriage, we do raise one another. We all grow within the marriage. It doesn't matter where a person started. Now, I'm not telling you guys to go to the rehabilitation center and look for your wives. No. You look for the right wife. But once you're in the marriage... Nekudatova ve'od nekudatova. Find the good. Strengthen the good. Appreciate the good. See the good. People ask, where is Hashem? And the answer, you guys have it here. Wherever you let him in. Every marriage could be a perfect marriage. I know Ephraim is sighing, but every marriage could.
It's not only about what you want.
I'm listening.
But also what the other person does or doesn't do want. Huh? It takes two to tango, isn't it?
The Gemara says there was a tzaddik and a tzaddikis. The tzaddik married a wicked wife. The tzaddikis married a wicked husband. After years, sages looked at it again. She had made her husband into a tzaddik, and the other one had made her husband into a rasha. How'd that happen? Think about it. Influence goes both ways. And Chazal said that in certain ways, the husband forms the marriage. He fashions the marriage. There are aspects where she does, there are aspects where he does. But you know what? This type of attitude grows. And I want to clarify it. People sometimes think, I'll see the good in them, they'll see the good in me. Wrong. We're not talking about any payback. Forget they're seeing the good in you. Forget they're appreciating you. It's not what we're talking about. So you'll say that's not fair. We're not talking about fair. We're talking about what's good for you. You want the good life? The good life is being at peace with yourself, being at peace with the good that you have, and then seeing the good in the others. After 20 years, we'll talk about whether they see the good in you or not. I'm willing to guarantee they will, Ephraim. And I'm willing to guarantee it'll be a beautiful marriage. Perfect, that's what's called perfect
so
in marriage.
It's not like if you failed in previous relations before, it's all your fault.
What does it say on the board? Past. What does it say on the board? We began with it.
Yeah, but yes or no?
So the question is, how do you build the future? No one's saying it's easy. Yeah, if we're going to talk about the one class that you shouldn't miss in Binyan HaBayit, it ain't going to be easy, right? We're talking theory now. The practice is lifelong work. No one's saying it's easy. I'm not saying, look, you guys are at the dating stage, most of you. So I'm just reminding you what we've said often, that our class is about once you're married, the day after you're married. Our class is not about dating.
Okay.
But after you're married, and I'm not telling you based on this to choose a wife. I'm telling you based on this to build your marriage. I hope I'm right. Like I said in the first class, that's you guys gauge whether it's right or wrong. But I think that if you look over the song, I think there are many interpretations to the song. I listened to the song maybe 10 times in preparation for the class. Kept asking myself, should I bring it or not bring it? Then I sat down and wrote down the translation and decided there are many tremendous messages in the song. I want to offer one But I think there are many, because I already came up with many listening to it again. Chazal tell us that every one of us has a counterpart in heaven, a representation of our potential. Meaning, we discussed it in the Parsha class two weeks ago, about the angels came down, compared Yaakov to his representation in heaven. And maybe the little sister that he's talking to is that potential. Meaning the comparison between the soul that is a twin. What's the soul that is a twin? There's the counterpart above. There's where I could be, where I am. And he keeps encouraging her, wait, give me a little bit more time. And I think there are wages for your actions. Very often, when we do things like this, we want to see the products now. I told you, 20 years. 20 years, do this for 20 years and then let's talk. I'm not yet married 20 years. I'm serious though. These are things that take decades. Not take decades to do. You can do it starting tomorrow. Take decades to see the products. And the rest of you guys can review the song. Maybe, are there any questions? Because if not, we'll end with playing the song and then maybe we'll. I don't think we're allowed to do that, but it exists on YouTube. It's available. I mean, to Shuli Rand, and the name of the song is Achot Ktana. You have it. Nekudatova, not Achot Ktana, Nekudatova. Okay. Yeah, Toda Rama. Any other questions? So maybe we'll play it after the okay. Remind me, what was the question?
What do you do when you have to review, when you have to critique your wife?
No. I thought I answered it. I didn't remember who asked the question.
Did you answer it?
No. Oh. What I meant to say, I guess I wasn't clear. If you strengthen the positive, then other things will fall by the wayside.
So is it safe to critique your wife? Or you just live with
it? I think that Bezrat Hashem, either next week or the week after, we'll get to it. For now, the answer is strengthen the positive. In a few weeks, after we get used to this concept of strengthening the positive, seeing the positive, then we could start talking about that rare instance that might happen once in a marriage or twice in a marriage, you know, over the course of 50, 70 years, might happen, you know, that there's something that you have to respond, you have to say something about. So then we could discuss that. Bezrat Hashem, we will. Because for some reason, people think it's more often than once or twice in a marriage. But, yeah. I'm with you.
Okay, there's something I'm going to cook up. Let's say your wife has the horrible habit of always leaving the milk out until it goes bad. Like, it always happens. Like, you come home from work, the milk has been out, and it goes bad. Are you supposed to not say something?
If that's the only problem, I would sign for it right now.
Yeah, I know. It sounds nice. But someone who leaves the milk out probably would have.
I wanted to begin class with the following story. A guy makes up with his wife that she'll pick him up at a certain exit on the highway. She forgets. His cell phone dies on the bus. And he gets off and he's standing there now. They made up a time. The bus got there a few minutes late, and it's dark, and it starts snowing. And he's standing there, and he doesn't have a cell phone, and he's thinking. Did she pass by before I came? Is she get off at the next exit, come back? After about 45 minutes, he stops thinking. He's starting to worry. He's freezing. He doesn't have a cell phone, and he can't afford to take a cab home. So he starts walking. Along the way, he goes into motels, 7-Elevens, you know, different stores to thaw out. And finally hits a payphone. He calls home. There's no answer. He gets home about midnight. He's walked most of the way. His feet are frozen. He's not sure if he's frostbitten or not. And his wife comes home about 12:31. He looks at her. Is everything okay? She says, yeah, what do you mean? He says, you were supposed to pick me up at 4:30 at the exit. She looks at him and says, oh, that was tonight? I'm so sorry. She starts laughing. What the difference is tonight? She's laughing. He looks at her, and you guys are laughing. I don't know how you guys can laugh. he looks at her, and he doesn't say anything. And she says, "No, I'm really, really sorry." And she laughs some more. He says, I think I need to go to the doctor. You know, my feet are a little frostbitten. She looks at the watch. She says, honey, I think you better go to sleep. You've had a long night. Think about it. That's how I want to start class. I made up the story, by the way. It didn't happen. But that doesn't matter. Because the equivalent have happened. Meaning I don't like bringing in true stories. Sometimes we do and change a few relevant facts. It doesn't matter. That's what I wanted to start class with. But think about it. Now you tell me where you think that marriage should go from here. And before you answer the question, oh, we're hitting our deadline again. I don't know if you guys want to continue. I mean, we can't do this every Sunday. I wanted to tell you a bunch of other stories, but we're already going off on a tangent. The guy tells his wife 1,000 times, please buckle the kids in. Please don't leave the house without having the kids seat belted in. And then one day, he gets the phone call to work that she's in the hospital. The kids were not buckled in. She was in an accident. One of them is with a concussion. The other one will leave to stay tuned. What happened with the other one? Loses one child, the other child with brain damage. Where does marriage go from there?
It's over. I would divorce my wife if she did that.
Okay. It doesn't work that way, sweetie. Before you judge that, ask yourself a question. How many things have you done that you know you shouldn't do? How many habits do you have that you have been unsuccessful in changing? And how many things are there that your wife has asked you, or will ask you, tens of times not to do? Do not leave your socks next to the bed. It's disgusting. When you finish an apple, throw it out. Do me a favor, don't leave it around. That doesn't endanger lives. Okay. I gave examples. I could have just as easily made the wife the one that begged the husband and the husband the one that messed up. We have to be realistic in life. And I gave you one story. If you go back 3 years ago in the Binyan HaBayit class, I spent one whole class quoting stories, true stories, of marriages that encountered challenges. And Gidon, let me just tell you a final story. There was a husband and wife. True story. The husband begged his wife, I know you like experimenting with chemicals, with elixirs, with alternative medicine. Do me a favor. Don't try it on me without talking to me. Okay? Fair enough, right? Legitimate request. One day the wife calls in the husband and says, honey, I got to tell you something. He looks at her, yeah. She says, well, yesterday I tried something which I thought was harmless. And I took from it and I gave you from it. And I didn't think I had to mention it because it was really like household ingredients. It was stuff that they said were really harmless. And I just found out that it was highly carcinogenic, and we have to go see an oncologist. And according to the information I have now, we have to write wills, and I don't know how much longer we have left to live. True story. And I'll even tell you the people involved. I usually don't disclose the people involved. I changed a few facts, but I'll tell you the names of the people involved. What? Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava, the first marriage. She gave him a food that killed him. End of story. What difference does it make? Because she took off 10 million years off his life. He would have lived eternally. She took off all of that. I don't care that he lived to 930 years. He could have lived to 10 million years. Thanks to her, he's dead. Okay, today he would be walking around among us because of his wife. He's dead. Okay, end of story. And now, how do you keep a marriage going? First marriage in world history. Yeah, get going.
Not that I would want to divorce my wife, God forbid, but I don't think it would be possible if your wife is directly responsible for death. If a wife is directly responsible for the death of the children in a marriage, I don't see how the other half. After warning the wife,
brilliant, times, brilliant, brilliant. No, that's the next story of marriage in Tanakh. What's the next story in Tanakh? A man named Lemech has two wives, Ada and Zila. And he has a hunting accident. He kills his son. And they take him to court, to Adam and Eve, and say, we want a divorce. And Adam and Eve have to sit in judgment. Adam has to sit in judgment. So Adam tells them, don't. So they say, big talker, you for 130 years now have left your wife ever since she caused your death. For 130 years, you haven't been living with her. What are you telling us? Don't. Adam says, fine, I'll take back Eve. I was wrong. I shouldn't have left her. I needed 130 years. You know, 130 years to calm down in their days. Okay, so I'm using simplistic terms. There's much more to those 130 years in Chazal, but we've gone overtime and it's not fair to people. So we'll have to pick up Bezachem next week. Food for thought. Food for thought. Yeah, let's talk after class because guys want to leave. Let's wish everyone a good night.